everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass, and we're back for the second part of today's It's All About Food show. What did you think of the first part? Cannibalism. It's kind of a fun concept, isn't it? Anyway, if you have some thoughts, let me know at info@realmeals.org. You know how I always love to get your reaction on some of the things going on this program. All right, now, this is going to be fun because I'm going to bring on a dear old friend, someone who I've never met, but I feel close to. Alan Rodiger now has a new cookbook we're going to be talking about, Almond Milk Cookbook. He's a writer, food designer, blogger, and public speaker. He has served clients as a private chef in the U.S., Europe, and Australia. Raised in Mexico City, has acquired a taste for exotic food early on and soon developed a passion for flavor and beauty that drives his diverse creative culinary style. He's passionate about empowering people to make smart choices in what they eat and to enjoy eating well at home. And we've talked about some of his other cookbooks on this show, Speed Vegan, Extraordinary Vegan, and Paleo Vegan, which showcase his ability to bring health and pleasure together in a wide range of dishes that are simultaneous, sophisticated, and accessible for the home cook. Alan, my friend, welcome.
My dear, how are you?
Good. Virtual hugs back to you.
Love the way you read my bio. Can you be my herald from now on?
Yes. I'm a voiceover artist, and I can do just about anything. Because I'm plant-powered. Thank you.
Unstoppable.
Yes. Extraordinary vegans we are.
Indeed.
Yes. Anyway, the question is, Alan, why have you been avoiding me?
I've not been avoiding you.
How come you haven't made me a meal?
Oh, I just haven't been in the same place at the same time. That's the only reason, I assure you.
I mean, it's been years now, really.
I know. People are going to start talking about us.
Anyway, Alan used to join me from time to time when I did the Ask a Vegan show, which I still have episodes archived on the Responsible Eating and Living website. Lots of good information in those programs. And you've also been on this show. You know, I haven't counted, and I probably should, but just like Dave Letterman counts, or on Saturday Night Live, the guests who count how many times they've been on the program, you're probably one who's been on more often than most.
And I have something on David Letterman. He's off the air, and I'm on the air.
Okay, very good. Woo. Now, let's get to the matter at hand, which is almond milk. Now, one of the nice things about your cookbooks is they tend to be small and digestible, not overwhelming.
You haven't been eating the books, have
you? Yeah. Well, we were just talking to Camille DeAngelis, who was talking about eating people, human people. So, you know, anything goes here.
Can't wait to get the podcast on that one.
It's fiction. But it's fun.
Okay.
It's fun fiction. So the first thing that I loved in this cookbook was pretty much the first page of text where you talk about almonds in history. Can we get a voiceover on that? Almonds in history. I needed a little more reverb, but that'll do. And fascinating. Can you tell us a little bit about almonds in history?
Well, you know, I did a little research because I've just been eating almonds. I haven't really been paying too much attention to their history. And it turns out that in the Middle Ages, almond milk was far more ubiquitous in cooking than dairy milk.
Ubiquitous is a big word for us here.
Oh, you know, like everywhere?
Okay, yes.
Except, you know, not like divine, but, you know, like pretty much every kitchen. Every single Middle Ages cook knew how to make almond milk and made it as a routine every day because dairy milk was expensive. You had to have a cow, which you had to buy a cow.
And then
you had to feed the cow. Uh-huh. You had to make sure the cow didn't get sick and die. And this was something that landowners had. This is something, you know, even the small farmers, many of them were kind of owned by somebody who had a castle, and they just were there for, you know, their benefit. And they didn't actually own their land. They didn't actually own their cattle or whatever. They just took care of it.
Mm.
So in order to have dairy milk, you had to be rich, and you had to be, you know, stationary. You couldn't be wandering around. So almonds, of course, are totally transportable, and you can make almond milk on the spot and use it right away, or you can leave it for a day and nothing's going to happen to it. Whereas dairy milk, you leave it for an afternoon and it's spoiled. So
right.
Almond milk was what they used for all the recipes, and I didn't know that. So it's kind of exciting, actually.
It is exciting, and I love the point that you mentioned. Not only is dairy milk very perishable, but the fact that you can hang on to almonds in their shell for an indefinite period of time if they're stored in a cool, dry place, and
right.
you can have milk any time you want it. It's ready
right.
as soon as you soak and blend up those almonds. Done. No refrigeration.
And in those days, they didn't even soak them. They just ground them and then mix them with water, sometimes hot water.
Okay,
and
now how did they grind them? Because they didn't have Vitamixers then.
No, they had the old-fashioned Vitamix.
A mortar and pestle
with almond in the middle.
Like a mortar and pestle.
Yeah, they used to have very large mortars because they used to do a lot of grinding. Nuts and seeds and everything. I mean, they didn't have grinders. Kitchens didn't anyway.
Okay, maybe that's a great a startup concept for somebody in Brooklyn or Chicago to get one of these giant solar-powered mortar and pestles to ground up nuts and seeds.
Muscle power, that's what they used. They didn't have solar. Just sitting there and pounded in a little hole and bam, bam, bam until it was powder. Yeah. And they had a lot of people hanging around the kitchen with, nothing to do except tell me what to do, and then they'd give it to them, like little scullery maids and those kinds of people.
Right. And you have a little paleo background because you had done that book with Ellen Jaffe Jones on vegan paleo. And this almond milk also fits in the paleo scene because they don't believe in dairy either. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it goes back to the very early days of cuisine when people just got a rock and mashed a leaf up with it and then rubbed it in something and put it together with something and made a little marinade or something, make something taste a little better. That's it. It goes right back to those old days when they were just grinding things up and trying to make something taste good.
So it's natural.
Yeah, totally.
Whatever natural means. Now, almonds are also good for us. Now, some people talk about how the packaged forms of almond milk, the kind we can get in the grocery store, just kind of like sugary water or something that doesn't have much nutritional value. But making almond milk ourselves, there's nothing wrong with it. It's only good.
Right. I mean, what they sell in the store is kind of intended just to replace milk as an ingredient, like to put in your tea or to put in your cereal or to, stuff that you would normally use dairy milk for, people that are making the transition to something a little healthier, that gives them a quick and easy way to do that. It's not really meant for nutrition. I mean, there is a little calcium they add to it, and there's some that's existing in the almond. But if you make your own almond milk, like when I make ice cream or if I'm using it in a soup or a sauce where I want it really creamy, I do two cups of almonds to four cups of water. Now, in the stuff that you get in the store, it's more like, a tablespoon of almonds to four cups of water.
Yeah, with a lot of other.
And they make it thick with thickeners, and they make it stay, milky with, emulsifiers and stuff. You don't need to do that if you're making your own. The only caveat is that you have to use it within a few days because it's fresh and it will eventually spoil after a few days.
And that's where I want to say you buy food and then you have to eat it. Or you make something and then you have to eat it. And that's the way it works successfully.
In the old days, they didn't even wait. In the paleo period, I mean, you want to go back, they just grabbed it off the bush and ate it. And maybe they would find some that they could stick in their little pouch, but that what they would eat for dinner. There was no next day, 3 days from now, next month. Oh, what's this? Never happened.
But we have... We have a terrible situation with wasting a lot of food in this country. People buy food, and it just goes bad in the refrigerator. They don't eat it.
Yeah, and that's a sad story, but that's not even the half of it, because my son works at Whole Foods, and he tells me that they have to throw food that's expired, and even though it's still perfectly good, it just has a date on it that's time's up, they have to get rid of it. And
they really need to
the manufacturer, and the manufacturer has to eat it, and not the food, but they have to eat the cod.
Oh, eat it!
Yeah. Then there's actual fresh food from the case, you know, from the little grazing area, mm-hmm. and they have to throw that away too. They can't give it to anyone, the employees. They cannot even give it to the employees.
That's the crazy part: how they can't give it to anyone. And because a lot of this stuff is really good, and that's where the freegans and dumpster divers come in to save the day. Not that that's something that I entirely encourage, but I did.
Hardly a lifestyle you want to emulate.
Well, you know, I have some friends that are serious dumpster divers. It's almost too easy to do in Manhattan, unfortunately. And there's so much good food that's put on the street, and a lot of it is packaged and clean. It's just crazy. But I did go on a few dumpster diving adventures about 10 years ago. I learned a lot. I was horrified, and I don't think it's changed very much since then. We need to figure that out. That's a piece of the food system equation that's very broken. But anyway, let's get back to almonds because that's the happy story.
La la la.
Now, you have recipes for almond milk,
mm-hmm,
rich almond milk, and almond cream.
Yes.
They're all easy,
and they're
just varied by the ratio of almonds to water. You choose.
That's right. How thick do you want it?
How thick do you want it?
Yeah.
And they all have their purpose. And then you use them in all of these wonderful recipes in your book.
Thank you. Yes, I did.
You're welcome. Now, I recently started making almond cream, and I think I discovered a version of it in the it's some kind of, I want to get it right, vegan holiday cooking from Candle Cafe.
Never seen that book.
Yes, it came out at the end of last year for the big winter holidays, and they had a lovely soup recipe that I made, not exactly, because I don't know how to follow recipes exactly. It's like a flaw in me, but they did use the almond cream, and such a good thing to put on soup or anything.
Yeah, and then if you flavor it, you can actually pair it with something where it goes. Like the almond crema, you know, to make it look sort of like that Mexican cream that they use. It's somewhere between sour cream and milk, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm. Chili ancho crema.
Yeah. I had a whole bunch of them, and my editor made me trim it down, you know, because I get carried away.
Well, you could add them to your blog.
I will.
Yeah, don't lose them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, they're not lost. They're just in a different folder.
Yeah. So when people are always complaining, I can't give up cheese. And although these aren't really cheeses, they're thick, creamy. They're kind of like ricotta cheese recipes almost.
Some of them, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, here's another thing that didn't make it into the book. I had an almond milk kefir.
Ooh.
That would be incredible. And then my editor said, because those kefir starters are dairy-based. Even though they don't have any milk in them, they're dairy-based, so it's not vegan. And then I did some research. No one's going to want to hear this.
Mm-hmm.
All the kefirs and all the yogurts, whether they say vegan on them or not, they all come from dairy. They don't have any dairy in them, but the original culture is grown on dairy products. And then, they remove it, but they make it into a little powder so you can pour it into your whatever you're going to grow kefir on.
But some of those cultures may have originated from dairy, but they don't use dairy to feed them or continue them anymore.
Right, but they are, in other words, in vegan terms, they're tainted. You know what I mean? They go back to the in a sense. Anyway, I said it. That's done. Okay.
I'm not worrying about it. Hair splitting.
There's a lot of
bacteria in the air that we can use to culture our food. And who knows where it comes from.
Not necessarily in a good way.
Well, I think when given a chance, all bacteria can be good. Are you a good bacteria or are you a bad bacteria? I think they go both ways.
I think it's like poison is in the dosage. It depends on how we have salmonella in us and E. coli and everything else. It's a question of how much it proliferates and does it start to become a problem. I think, does it make you sick or is it just kind of floating around in there?
Okay, I have a question about what's not in this book. Maybe I'm wrong, but I didn't notice any recipes with nutritional yeast. Is that true?
It may very well be because I use nutritional yeast mostly for like when I steam vegetables, I put some of that Udo's oil on it and then garlic and then nutritional yeast. I just pack it on there because it tastes really good.
But I never
once thought of mixing it with milk.
Right. Well, I was thumbing through and looking through the recipes and going, oh, that looks good, that looks good. And then towards the end, I thought, I don't think I saw nutritional yeast once. Now, I just noticed that because I tend to put it in everything.
Well, I'll have to start doing that and see how it works.
Yeah, but I think it pairs very nicely with thick cream.
It does, now that I think of it. You know, and in fact, there's a recipe that another thing my editor made me do was put a bunch of recipes in there that would be... The idea behind this book was not to get somebody to go vegan. The idea was to get them, give them a way to make stuff that they normally make with almond milk instead of dairy milk. Give it like a stepping stone for them.
Yeah.
Not trying to convert anyone, just trying to give them a way to use almond milk in new ways, but also in the old ways, like making biscuits and, you know, all that stuff that I never eat and don't recommend, but they're going to want it, so you got to give them a recipe for it.
Absolutely, because we're all on a different, the same path, but we're all in different places on that food continuum.
Yeah, some of us are out trudging through the weeds wondering where the path is.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm looking at cream of mushroom soup, which...
Yeah, that one's tolerable.
Tolerable?
No, it's fine.
It's good.
No, editors have a way of shredding your recipes, you know, and doing things to them. But which ones you have to try. The kohlrabi soup is really, really good.
Okay.
Really, really good.
Well, that's good because most people don't know what to do with kohlrabi.
I know, and it's such a fantastic vegetable. Of course, you do have to peel quite a bit off the outside so you can chew it.
Mm-hmm.
But the heart of that thing is delicious. Somewhere between a broccoli and then an artichoke or something. It's really good.
Okay, kohlrabi soup. And Chef Rottinger also recommends?
Oh, I recommend highly, 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 one of the five best things I've ever made, the chocolate almond ice cream. And it's so easy.
Mmm. Everybody loves ice cream.
And anybody who doesn't love chocolate, I have to wonder about.
Yeah, I remember, now I'm thinking of, I don't know why I'm going this way, but I remember back in the days when I did consume cow's milk. It was a long time ago. But I remembered trying frozen ice milk, like ice cream made with milk instead of cream or whatever.
No. My mother tried to get me to eat that when I was
kidding. No.
Are you kidding me?
I liked it. There was something...
You did?
There was something I liked about it, and I find that when I've made almond milk recipes, they remind me of that a little bit. Only better, of course. But
not if you make the rich almond milk.
Oh, rich almond milk.
With 2 cups of nuts, with 4 cups of water. Mm.
Yes.
Very creamy.
I don't know. Maybe the almond milk, maybe the frozen, maybe the frozen ice milk varieties I tried were flavored with almond, and maybe that's where I got the almond idea from. I don't know.
I don't know either, but my mother tried to give me these, and it was just, no.
Ech.
I used to put cream on my cereal, okay, so I was not about to eat.
Goodness, you were like gourmand from way back.
You know, my mother knew she had a problem child on her hands when I was a baby. She had a little satin pillow. I remember, I don't know how I can remember it because I was so young, but I remember it had little rainbow stripes on it. It was satin. It was a little baby pillow. And she put a flannel pillowcase on it. And every time she'd come in to check on me, I would have pulled the flannel off and I'd be lying there with my face on the satin. She knew, okay, this kid's going to be something to deal with.
Yeah. All right, I want to talk about the bad rap almonds have been getting with respect to the California drought.
It's not the almonds' fault.
Hello? It's not the almonds' fault.
No, it's not the almonds. And it, you know, if somebody gets a bad rap, it should be the meat and dairy industry who are really using a ton of water to no particular good.
Exactly. So don't feel bad about eating almonds, even if they're from California. We need to get this whole thing figured out. The thing is, ditch the dairy, ditch the meat, and we'll be a lot better
off. Don't cry for the almondino.
Oh, I've got to add that to my repertoire.
There you go. I thought you'd like that. Just came from just like that.
Now, what about babies and almond milk?
Apparently, it's not good for infants.
Yeah.
It might be just too hard for them to digest.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you want to give them milk, it, you know, should come from their mama.
Exactly.
This was intended for them.
Yeah. Unfortunately, some mamas can't, but almond milk
is
not.
Well, yeah, but some of them just don't try hard enough.
Yeah.
I said, you know, my wife could have given up, you know, when my son was born. It wasn't easy. It really wasn't.
Yeah.
But she kept at it because she really wanted to breastfeed.
Yeah.
And eventually it all kind of clicked. But, I could see how somebody who, you know, has no, you know, maybe no education about it or no understanding about it or grew up on formula and figures what's the difference, they might just go, oh, this is just not going to work and give up, you know.
Sure, there's a lot of misinformation, but there are a small amount of women who really, for one reason or another, cannot. They can either use milk from another woman, and, oh, gosh, I remember reading a few weeks ago some horror stories about that, about how some human milk that you can buy online was mixed with dairy milk.
I thought some woman was making ice cream, breast milk ice cream.
Oh, well, I mean, that's a whole other thing.
But maybe mixing it with dairy.
Mixing with dairy when people didn't know it was mixed with dairy, and that's nasty, cruel.
Miscegenation of the species. It's kind of weird.
Yeah. Anyway, back to almond milk.
We seem to veer off, don't we?
So, whose idea was it to do an almond milk book? Yours or your editor's?
No, it was my publisher's. Actually, it's really kind of like, I mean, we have a confession to make. This is really their book, and they got me to write it because I write good books.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's how these other items got in there. I had a big fight with them over it. I was like, no, I can't put stuff in there like white flour. And I've already done one cooking demo at Natural Grocers, and the book was going around. You know, somebody was passing the book around. It wasn't even about the almond milk because they didn't have enough time to get the books in. But so they were passing one around, and somebody in the back goes, "White flour."
Mm. I know. You know,
not my fault.
It's so hard. Because I know we want to do what's best for the world. We want to show people how they can eat nutritiously and deliciously, and do it in a loving, non-judgmental way. Everybody's in a different place on that food continuum. And it's like you can't win no matter what you do. You're either too extreme, too rigid, or not extreme enough.
Yeah. No, that's why I just stick to my guns. You know, I know I'm not going to win in terms of, you know, like pleasing everyone or making everyone think that I'm doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I figure if I feel that I'm doing the right thing, then I don't care what anybody thinks. You know, because I'm doing it for myself. I'm doing the best that I can.
All right.
And that's where I got a little irked because I was like, I was kind of like, there was a chain around my neck and they were jerking me back.
So I want to know, in some of these recipes where you do use white flour, what would you use instead?
I wouldn't make that recipe. I don't make pancakes. I mean, I know you like to bake, and I'm sure you have a lot of good substitutes. But I figure, you know, because I come from a long history of doing certain things really well. And I would rather do new things really well than try to make the old things not so well, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So if I look at a recipe like that I used to make, I don't know, profiteroles. They have ice cream inside, and they're made with eggs, butter, milk.
Yes.
You know, I mean, there's no way you're going to make it the same.
I've made them, and they're better.
Okay, well, we'll have to get together.
Yes, I love doing things like
it's
that. Making, I've made recently made vegan cannolis that were pretty damn good.
I wasn't terribly fond of the Sicilian regular old cannolis, but...
Oh, my God, then you never went to a good Italian baker.
I've been to a few good Italian bakeries, but they had other things. I guess I just didn't know.
Oh, as a kid, I went nuts over cannolis.
I grew up in Mexico. We call those tacos.
You haven't had a good cannoli, and you probably never will have a good dairy cannoli. But
anyway, so look,
the world is filled with all kinds of people, and we all can't do the same thing, right?
Right.
You're doing what you're doing, and that's fine and good.
Thank you.
Yes. And
Kind of made my day.
So my question is, are you working on a cookbook that you want to do now?
No, you know what I'm working now on is I realize that I'd better start getting on the stick and making a living, because the cookbooks really don't support
you. I've heard that. Yeah,
they're great. They're a wonderful calling card to get you in the door. It's a nice thing every now and then. Oh, my royalty check. Yay.
Yeah.
But it's not like, you know, unless you're John Grisham or somebody, you're not going to make a living off of books.
Yeah.
So what I figure I'm going to do is I'm going to just get out there and start teaching more cooking classes and maybe writing some articles for magazine, which you do get paid nicely for. Just sort of develop a following, you know, get enough people that are interested in what I have to offer, that when I do come out with a new book, there'll be a whole bunch of people to buy it, and then I can write the book that I want to write.
That sounds like a really good plan, Alan, and I want to thank you for joining me again on It's All About Food.
Over?
Excuse me?
It's over?
It's over, yes.
Oh.
I will see you somewhere, someday, somehow, and you're cooking.
I promise.
And you're cooking. I'm going to let you go, or you could stay on for the last minute or so, but I wanted to say this was Alan Rodinger, and he's got a new book, Almond Milk Cookbook, and we can find you at alanrodinger.com, right?
Yeah, but you better spell it, because no one will be able to tell.
ALANROETTINGER.com.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Right. And on the subject of teaching, I am involved right now with John and Ocean Robbins. I am so privileged to be a part of this, but we are doing a six-week online course called Plant Powered and Thriving. It started last Tuesday, and we have our second class tonight, but, you know, you're welcome. This is the global you, my audience out there, to join in if you want to. It's been so amazing. I'm a part of it as a co-director, but I'm learning so much, and you can find out more about it at where is it? healthy.foodrevolution.org. It's called Plant Power and Thriving, and I'm loving it. So that's the end of the show. Thanks for joining me, Alan, and we'll see you sometime. Meanwhile, everyone, have a delicious week.